This is Infidel One. Offending Coyote Down. Offending Coyote Down.
Roger that.
Welcome to Trappin' Radio. We're proud, organic, free-range, wild fur farmers of North America.
Let me tell you a little story about how I was raised. Every day work, every day pray. God, family, friends, yeah, everybody sins. A winner never quits, and a quitter never wins. Help folks in need, don't fall for greed. A jealous man is weak, so think before you speak. If you love them, let them know. If you hate, let it go. Fast can be fun, but sometimes you need slow. God is all good, the devil is so real. So listen up, y'all, cause this is how I feel.
I won't back up, I don't back down. I've been raised up to stand my ground. Take my job, but not my guns. Tax my check till I ain't got none. Except for the good Lord up above. I answer to no one.
Now let's cover our sponsors. They do a lot to help support Trappin' Radio. So I'm asking you guys out there and gals to help support our sponsors as they keep Trappin' Radio on the air. First sponsors, Oki Cable and Trap Supply. Jeb's the owner of this. He's out of Oklahoma. Super guy. You'll not meet anybody nicer. It's somebody you're going to want to deal with. You can reach him at oktrapsupply.com. You can give Jeb a call at 918-429-4648. Not only does he do trap supply guys, he's a fur buyer, so if you're around the Oklahoma or surrounding states, give him a call with your fur. When you need stuff, give him a call and he'll get it out to you as soon as he can. Our second sponsor is F&T Fur Harvesters Trading Post. Everything you need for trapping, hunting with hounds, and predator calling. Guys, if you're into trapping fur, hunting fur, chasing fur with dogs, you're not going to be able to think of hardly anything that you can't get from F&T. You can reach them at fntpost.com. You can also give them a call at 989-727-8727. Whatever you want, F&T's got it. Wildlife Control Supplies, proven solutions for wildlife control, delivering value, expertise, and products to the wildlife individual. If you're in the ADC business, control business, even fur trapping, you need to look at these guys' website. Top-notch company, have everything you would want, even the odd stuff that ADC guys are looking for. You can reach them at wildlifecontrolsupplies.com. You can give them a call at 877-684-7262. International number is 860-844-0101. If you're a wildlife control professional, you need to have Wildlife Control Supplies as one of your favorites on your computer or your phone, because when you come across something that you need specialized equipment, Alan will get it right out to you. Now let's go trapping.
See, I'm a flag flying, Bible toting son of a gun. Yeah, I'm hell on the heart, just a rebel on the run. Scared, don't know it, fear, don't feel it. The truth is the light, sometimes you gotta fight. Good beats bad, right beats wrong. I'm a barroom preacher and this is my song. I'm climbing for the top, representing for the country. I'm the people's champ, right out to dead camp. Shotgun toter, Republican voter. Hank Jr. supporter, let's protect our border. To hell with anyone who don't believe in the USA. Cause this is what I say.
I won't back up, I don't back down. I've been raised up to stand my ground. Take my job, but not my guns. Tax my check till I ain't got.
Welcome to Trapping Across America. This is your host, Clint Locklear. And we're going to be covering a bunch of different topics today. But the first thing I want to talk about is, have y'all seen the fur prices? I mean, the fur prices are a mix. But the ones that are good are really, really good. And the ones that are bad are really, really bad. Now, if you just got started in trapping, I want you to forget about the last couple of years. And let's look a little bit more historically at kind of the way the fur market's been. Even back in the fur boom that a lot of guys hear about or may experience some of, back before the Black Friday of 1987 and everything just went to crap, not just in fur, but everything else as far as stock market and money and things like that. People are under the impression that everything was worth a ton of money. Everything was, at all times, no matter what you call it, it was worth a lot of money. And guys, that's just not the case. If you go back and look at those records, what you'll find is a few periods in there where it seems that way. Most of the time, you had two or three articles that were really high, and the other stuff was just not. Like, for example, even in the fur boom, you went from water animals being hot to long-haired fur being hot, and the guys that didn't want to chase what the market didn't want didn't see the prices that people think that they, you know, that they've got. You know, I've talked to Newt, where, you know, back when he used to drink a little bit, you know, he could drink beer just off of when possums were $6-7 a piece. They could most of the time get their beer money, that's by picking a possum up off the road. You know, it was really high at that time. And then what you would find is you have your mink and your coon and your muskrats, they'd be really high, and then those would kind of falter, and then your fox and your coyotes and your cats and different things like that would be really high, and they would go back and forth and everything. And I think that's what we're seeing right now at the North American Fur Auction Sale. I got finally got a text and got to talk with Jeff down there in Louisiana. He had some issues going, which I'm hoping I can get him to do a show kind of explaining the crap storm he ended up in down there, and it looks like he's going to get to stay above dirt for a little while, so it didn't turn out as serious as it looked like it could have got, but hopefully I can get him to talk about that. But I was talking with him, just making sure everything like that was okay, and, you know, and he was talking about, you know, the fur prices, and he sent me this text from Napa, and guys, I'm still swamped making lures, so I'm getting to run some traps, but not anything like I've done in the past. You know, it's just not possible. And so I haven't really been as concerned personally about what the fur market is just because of everything that I've seen. I'm just storing. You know, I'm just storing stuff. But, you know, they didn't seem to do anything with cats. And at the January sale, that's not exactly unnormal if they don't know what they are, because it is such a high-priced niche market that they've got on those bobcats. A lot of times they'll hold those to another sale. So that doesn't mean that there wasn't interest in them. That just means they don't know if they were going to get slammed or not, so they pulled them off. And that's not a bad thing when they do that necessarily. But the coyotes, you know, eastern coyotes averaging about $50 a piece. Averaging, guys, not tops. Averaging $50 a piece. That's dang near otter money, for the most part. And catching coyotes can be difficult, and most guys are not going to have the time or the equipment or the land to go out and catch 300-400 of these things. But, you know, someone that really pays their dues, puts their time in, does all that type of stuff. Now, you can go out and you can catch 50, 60, 70 if you really work on it and you make it a priority in your life to do so. And a lot more guys could bump that 100 number if they really wanted to. I know here in Tennessee, if you wanted to catch 100 coyotes over the course of the season, it's not going to be a walk in the park, but it's not going to be that difficult either. Because you'll have several days of one or two, then you'll have several days of 8 or 10 if you get out there and really bust your hump to do it. But at $50 a piece for eastern coyotes, there's some money to be made there. I mean, especially when you think about it in terms of, let's say, a cat. And this is where I think a lot of guys get confused on animals. They think very linearly, which is a dangerous way to think, in my opinion, because it limits how you look at certain topics. So if coyotes are 50 and cats are 100, you get excited over a $100 cat, but you may not get as excited over a $50 coyote. But because of the numbers of coyotes in most places are way more than the number of cats, it's easier to catch two coyotes to one cat. it's probably easier for the energy involved and the expense involved to catch 4 to 5 to 10 coyotes per one cat, just because the population's always askew that way. So if you didn't think about a cat or a coyote, but you thought about money per time, you get excited over $100 cat when you should be getting excited over the same amount of production and effort going into this as a $400 block of coyotes, if you kind of follow what I'm saying. And you Western guys, you know, if you're looking for somewhere to go with these prices the way they're at, it'll probably a little too late this year to pull the trigger and do this. I mean, you probably still do okay, but you're going to run into a lot of weather issues and fur's going to start be breaking down by now. But, you know, you start looking at South Dakota, North Dakota, Colorado, Northern Kansas, up into Wisconsin, probably over some into Minnesota, Montana, Wyoming, Idaho, Utah, different places like that where you've got the really good, you know, the high mountain coyotes in New Mexico. Those coyotes guys are doing about 180 average. I want you to think about that. A coyote is about 180 average in those areas. Now, someone would go to Texas, for instance, and they'd get all excited about $100 or $150 cats. Well, you know, when we're down there pounding them things in Texas, we may catch 100 cats, but at the same time, the effort that we're putting in just by the nature of what we're doing, we're catching 400 coyotes. 3 to 4 easy. 3 easy. 4, and it's been over 5 one year. Now, if I was in an area that had that many coyotes, I personally could care less about the cats at that point. You know, it's kind of like, it's just the way that you look at things when you're a trapper on how you look at it. That's the reason I like Ryan Schaefer's view. He doesn't care what his average is. He wants to know what his check is because he knows how much time and energy he put in that. And guys, money is nothing but energy. You're trading your energy for somebody else's energy. That's all money is. And if you start really breaking down how you look at money and you think about it in that terms, you start making better decisions on your side, and then you start making better decisions on how you spend your energy. So if you're going out and you can catch 4 coyotes at $50 a piece over $100 cat, you're 100% ahead. You know, that's a way of looking at it. It's the same when muskrats were 12, and you may not be able to catch, you know, 1,000 muskrats, but if you really looked at the numbers, you could make as much on $12 rats as you could on $10 coon for the amount of energy that went into that, which is your production. The fox were, I think they were averaging about 40, if I remember right. $40 red fox, you know. I mean, I know we all wish they was 150 or 100 or 75. But 40's not bad. You get in a place that's got red fox, $40 starts adding up pretty quick, you know. And most guys that I talk to that trap for a living, they have, and I used to be the same way. And it's funny how guys that trap for money have this certain, they come to kind of the same conclusion over time. My goal when I was trapping strictly for the fur, for total 100% of my income, was I wanted to figure out a way that I could average $100 a day. If I could average $100 a day, and I keep in mind this was also 20 years ago, but if it was $100 a day, I was doing twice as good as someone working at a regular job, for the most part, you know, except for white-collar professionals and stuff like that. But most guys that work, if I could do $100 a day, strapping 7 days a week, at $700 a week. I don't know what that is if you break that down per hour. But here in Tennessee, that was not that bad. Some days I'd make more, some days I'd make less. If I could average out $100, I could do. So 2 coyotes a day at these averages, depending on where you're at, that's not bad. I mean, that's really not bad. And that's not even, I don't think, a full-time commitment. and that's not counting the other animals that you're getting in, that you will be picking up just for the simple sake that you're going to be out there, because you're going to have other stuff that's caught. And you can throw that on the back end of that. Coons are down, and a lot of guys want to be coon specialists, and that's fine. We've talked about storing. So if you're doing that, store. Another thing that was a big shock was the otter. The otter was down below $20 an average. Does that mean I would stop trapping otter if I came across some really good spots? Not a chance. I'm going to store them, because I know value-wise, in 2 or 3 years or next year at the end of this season, it's going to be worth a whole lot more than that. That's not an animal like a raccoon where there's a ton of them out there. And when the prices drop, people quit trapping for them, so it gets the availability of them out of skew, and they spike really quick. So just because you're not getting a whole bunch for an otter, if you looked at your production in form of energy and what you can sell it for, otter's still not a bad deal. You just might not get paid for that energy today. It may be next year or the year after. I see this as a great thing. And if you look at the Copenhagen wild mink sale, they were rocking. I mean, they were rocking. Good prices, 100% sale. It didn't match what we were hearing everybody going crazy about. Were the coons bad at the NAFA sale? Yeah. I don't know what the beaver did. I doubt they're going to be that great this year. But that gives you an opportunity. If you know that people are going to stop trapping beaver, that means that caster is going to be worth a whole lot more money. And you've got to average that into the cost of what the fur is, because it's the total amount. So I really don't see the fur market as being as dreary and as bad as people say it is. And if you look at your fur over long term, $50 and $40 is not bad. And if the cats are bringing $50, I have a feeling the cats aren't going to be like an otter. Won't know. You know, there's no way of knowing for sure. But if they come out really low, that's okay. I'll store them. You know, so I'm not really worried about that. I've got otter right now that is getting ready to get put up for storage. $20 doesn't bother me one bit. But what it may get me to do is maybe I will transfer some of the energy that I'm doing on trap lines right now, switch them over from maybe as much in the water as I was doing to more of the land stuff, because that's where it's at, you know. And it's like a cruel game to individual trappers. You know, when I'm trapping some more in the water because I enjoy it. And that's the way that I'm taking my trapping now. I'm doing what I enjoy. But at the same time, I can see, well, maybe I need to cut out a little bit of that and put a little more time to the ground to cover the cost of what I want to do, just so it's more of an even keel. And then I can sell that production later at a higher cost. But, guy, the fur market is not as bad as they say. Now, in the country, I don't know what that is. You know, I've heard some crazy stories about what people are selling fur for and what guys are offering for fur. But when you hear what I'm telling you now, the local guy does not know what the real fur market is until it starts really emerging. And for this year, it just started really emerging. And a local guy, if he's hearing nothing but, you know, bad news, if you put yourself in his position, you would not overpay for something if you didn't know if it was even worth close to that. So those guys are just like any other business. If they think coon's going to be worth $6, they can't pay $12 or $8 or even $6, because they're going to have to get it. Most of the time, they're going to have to do something with it. They're going to have to put the cost of getting it to a buyer inside of that. All that's real money that costs these guys real stuff. So they don't really know exactly what the market is until it really starts developing. And this year, it just started developing. So if you're thinking that the fur market's just in the toilet, maybe the water is just, that's the cycle that we're in right now, where the water stuff may not be the most important things to be putting your energy into, and it could be more land-based. And you don't really know. And, you know, like when I've tracked with Matt Jones before, you know, he'd always look and go, what everybody wants to go catch is what I need to go trap for, because that's normally what's going to rise in price. That's definitely a way to look at it. The other way of looking at it is, trap what you want to trap. Trap what is available. Sell what's selling high. Keep what's selling low. And then and over the course, if you do that for 20 years, you're always selling on the high. And then it really doesn't matter to you one way or the other at the moment. Now, the only time that I would say that does not play into effect, if you're in the situation that I was 20 years ago, and I decided that I was going to make a living from catching fur, you got to sell it for what it is, because you've got to have money. And that's why now, when I'm talking about, if I could go back in time, I would have had a more of a business, not based inside of the trapping, just for the simple fact that something else would level out and wouldn't put so much stress on the trapper during the trapping season, and then he had to be forced to sell his production at low cost. It's just all a mindset, guys. That's exactly what all this is a mindset. And I don't want to keep beating this horse, but I know it's coming. The dichotomy of Republicans and Democrats, and people that fight for the Republicans or fight for the Democrats, and they get all upset and they put their belief in the political system, and then they listen to a conservative say that they're going to repeal immigration. Guys, don't believe that. It's showmanship. That's all it is. Republicans have just come out and basically said, you know, we're going to back down from immigration. President Obama is putting a lady in for the leader of the Department of Justice, who's not going to go after people that are illegal here and working. Now, if you're not thinking in a linear fashion, and you think about things outside of the scope of just where you're at the moment, this is where this starts becoming an issue for trappers. And this is why trappers need to create their own job, their own income. Even if it's part-time, they need to have something. Because if you're working somewhere, no matter how good or special you are, if it's not something that you couldn't train somebody to physically do in a couple of weeks, and they couldn't bring in somebody and pay them less money to do what you're doing, you're probably in trouble. Because with the executive order from Obama basically saying that 5 million of them come in and work, which probably is going to turn into 20 million before it's over with, because that's the way the government works. They lie to you every time they open their mouth. And now you got a Department of Justice that the Republicans are backing down from because they're too scared, because she's a black and she's a woman, that they're going to be looking unpolitically correct. So they're going to let someone in there that's going to make sure that hardworking Americans are going to be competing with illegal aliens at their jobs. So if you're in one of those type jobs, and everybody thinks when they're at a job that the job can't work unless they're there, and most of the time that is BS. It just is. So if you're doing a job that an illegal can't do with some training, or you're doing a job that can't be done with automation, or you're doing a job that can't be done on a computer, you're probably okay. But if you're in a job that someone could bring in an illegal and train them, you need to start looking at a way to create your own job. And the creation of your own job, if you start looking at it from an entrepreneur's mindset, guys, it really changes. Because I don't know what brought this thought to my mind the other day, and trust me, we're going to get to trapping, but sometimes some of this other stuff is just as important or more important to a trapper. When you're an employee, do you realize what you're doing? You're outsourcing your form of income to to somebody that does not have your best interest at heart. They've got their company's best interest at heart, just like you would if it was your company. So it doesn't make them a bad person. That's just the reality of the world. So if you've got a job and you're outsourcing your way of paying your house payment and your car payment and your electric and your food and your retirement and all that, you're outsourcing that, totally regulating that to another person that does not have your best interest at heart the way you would, and now they're going to let illegal aliens come in and do it for cheaper, and they don't have to worry about the law coming after them for it. What do you think a majority of the businesses are going to do? Why would they pay somebody $18 an hour to do a task over and over again when they can pay an illegal $8? You know the answer to that. They're going to do it. So if you're one of these, if you're one of the trappers out there that has a job and you're doing something like that, start looking at ways of creating your own income. And creating your own income is not hard. I was sitting here yesterday. I mean, I'm not going to go into a permaculture rant here, but this hit me yesterday. You know, people say you can't make money. Have you ever been to a Walmart or a Home Depot or a Lowe's or a garden center in spring? Have you ever been to one of those places? If not, you ought to go this spring. About April 15th or 20th, just get you a cup of coffee or a Coke and go sit in the parking lot of one of these places. You want to see what making money is, you will see what making money is. Because people come out of there after spending hundreds of dollars for plants, either for the garden, trees, bushes, annuals to put in the little flower bed to make mom happy. They do that. So that's making real money. And what I'm getting ready to tell you, I didn't realize this till yesterday. In the permaculture scheme that I do, where I grow a lot of fruit trees, I'm always trying to figure out ways to not have to deal with weeds and grass. Now, the neat thing about nature is if you have bare ground, it's going to put something there. And it's normally going to be something you don't want there. So one of the principles of permaculture is you put something there that you want there and it takes up the space so the weed doesn't have anywhere to grow. Or you shade it out and it can't get sun. It's a pretty simple concept. Well, I've noticed that my wife likes daisies. They're flowers. I didn't know anything about daisies. I actually got her some, had delivered at her work the other day just because it was Wednesday. You know, just one of those type things, just saying that I appreciate her. So I sent the flowers over. They were in the store. I'm looking, and this is in Dunlap, and I'm looking at what they've got, and I'm like, well, where do these flowers come from? They say these come from California. And I'm like, would you buy them locally if you could buy them locally? And she said, I would much rather buy them locally because it wouldn't cost as much, probably because of the shipping to get them from California to here. So I'm looking at daisies, so I get back home. Now, this is how you create your own job, guys, and it doesn't have to be with plants. But it's just one of those things that comes up in everybody's lives a couple of times a week, and most people run away from it as fast as they can because it may get in their TV time. So I come home. My wife called me from work, texted me from work. She really liked the daisies. They're fresh, they're pretty, they smell good, and all that type of stuff. So I get online, and I'm like, well, I've got all these new beds I put out here with the persimmon trees and jujube trees and pomegranates and all this type of stuff. I'm going to have an understory there so I don't have to weed so much. So I go, and I go, well, maybe I'll plant some in daisies. So I get online, I found a source that's got seeds, I find out these plants are perennials, which I like because I only got to plant them once. I buy a pound of seed of daisies. And then I'm looking on there and they've got a pound of coneflowers, or echinacea, however you want to say it. Purple, they do very well here in my environment. So I bought a pound of those. Didn't think anything about it. My idea is to put down a thing of compost, throw the seeds out, enough of them will catch that it'll grow in thick. I won't have the weed problem. Now, here's where the creating your own job comes in. And I'm using something that most people that listen to this show are not going to be interested in. And I'm doing that for a reason. Because these things are all around you if you think about it. Even if it was a part-time, springtime thing like flowers. As unmanly as that sounds. But I'm getting ready to tell you why it's manly. And why creating your own job, if you don't do it, it's out of laziness and just don't care about yourself as much as you need to. And you just coast. And you keep regulating your income to somebody else. I was just thinking, well, I wonder how many seeds are in a pound of daisies or echinacea plants. So I get on this magical thing we have now called Google. And I Google how many seeds are in a pound of echinacea plants. Do you know how many seeds are in that? It was 99,700 and something seeds on average in a pound. I paid $30 for them. So I've got the potential to grow 99,000 coneflowers. And the daisy seeds, from what I could tell, were the same. So I've got a chance to grow 180,000 plants for $60. Now, if I did that, would I need containers? I've got containers, but you could go buy containers for a nickel a piece. You can build your own compost for next to nothing, and you can get river sand out of most rivers in the bins that you put in those things anyway, and that wouldn't cost you very much money. So basically, at the most, let's say I've got $150 into growing these plants. Before it's all said and done, $188,000. I'm going to take my handy dandy smartphone out here because these are numbers that it's hard to understand, especially for somebody that trades hours for income. That's 180,000 plants. They're perennials. An average cheap perennial, guys, if you're not in the garden, an average cheap perennial that is very small is worth $3. So I'm going to go times 3 equals $540,000. I'm going to have $150 in to the potential to make $540,000. Now, can I sell 180,000 plants just around locally? I don't know, but if I wanted to, I guarantee I could sell $50,000 worth of plants. 150 for 50,000. Or if you were really serious about it and you really wanted to get wound up into this, $150 for $500,000. That's the new world that we live in because of the ways that we can now market that you go create your own money. And I don't care if you're bringing in heroin, marijuana, or crack. You're not going to turn 150 pounds of marijuana into $500,000. You're not going to turn heroin into that. I don't even know how to do the percentages of what the return on money is from $150 to $500,000. Don't even know what it is. Would you have to really bust your hump to do that? You better believe it. But are you busting your hump now for $12, $15, $20, $25 an hour? If you spent the 8 hours that you spend at a job you don't like doing something you could care less about for people that don't care about you, if you spent those 8 hours a day growing these plants, and I'm not saying you should, but look at the return on your production from doing that. Then, when the fur market does, if you just want to be the most badass coon trapper in the world, and you want to trap coons and only bring in $3, do you really care? At that point, no. If it's a part-time gig and you're doing something like this, and all of a sudden your company starts bringing in illegal Mexicans for half of what you do, and they're not going to ask for overtime. And the way the new law is with Obama's executive order, the companies don't have to pay in any type of retirement or health insurance for illegals. So if your company does that to you and you started creating your own way, you're more stable as a person, which means you're going to be more stable as a trapper, which means you're going to be more stable as a human being. And that's the way it should be. And that's a reason when I bring up things like this, it's so important to me to try to reiterate this over and over again. Create your own income. And if you really, truly just love trapping, create it out of trapping, so you don't ever have to take the I've got to do this for money part and transfer it into what you really want to do, which is just go trap. Because if you just really were enthralled with catching weasels, you're probably not going to make a living off catching weasels. But if you had another way that money was coming in, you wanted to go catch weasels, dude, that's the most important thing. Go have fun catching weasels. Who cares what they bring? You're having fun. You're doing what you want to do. That's what a free person should be shooting for. And a free person's also got to think about the rest of his life when it comes to being secure and start taking control of your own income instead of outsourcing your income. I mean, is it a wonder? Everything's screwed up. We outsource our income. We outsource our kids to daycare. We outsource our kids to teachers that really don't care about what's going on in school anyway. We outsource our insurance. We outsource our retirement. We outsource our energy. We outsource our food. And all of these people have their best interests in heart and not yours. And we wonder why everything seems so screwed up. Being free is a little bit of responsibility. So I'm going to finish with this. If you're in a place where you can be, where an illegal can, with a little bit of training, take over your job, you need to start figuring out a way to create some income. So I just want to go to that. Okay, I'm going to read an article. This comes from Dennis from Ohio. You know, a lot of guys email me, write me, talk to me. They want to do predator control and this, that, and the other. This is a great example on how to get information to do that. I believe, see, this is on, I know this thing's called Outdoor News, but I think it's Illinois Outdoor News. Is what I think this is. I'm not really sure because I also see up here Minnesota, Wisconsin, Michigan, Pennsylvania. I don't get magazines like that, so I really don't know what this is. And this was on an online thing. But if you Google, do whitetails alter habits to avoid coyotes, you'll come up with this article. It's by Tim Burton, and he's a writer for them. So, and it was August 21st, 2014. Now, there's a couple of things here that I want to go over for trappers. Okay, I'm going to read this. But I want you to take your trapping hat off. You're no longer a trapper. Don't know how to trap. Didn't even really know it was legal to trap. You're just like the other people around you that you when you talk to them about trapping. That's you right now. You're not a trapper. Don't think about this in form of trapping. I want you to think about this in form of a deer hunter or someone that owns property and is trying to manage deer. I say, now you take your trapper hat off, you put on your management hat, and you're now the deer hunter, not the trapper. Okay, Springfield. A year into study on how coyotes pressure affects the behaviors with hunters, wildlife watchers around the country are patiently wanting to learn what they may already be known. Okay. Whether it's Illinois, Wyoming, Pennsylvania, or Georgia, growing coyote populations are causing at least some degree of havoc on whitetail herds. Biologists at the University of Georgia Deer Lab began a unique study last summer, it's written in 2014, looking at whitetail deer in two separate controlled environments, one with control and one without. So there was trapping at one of these, not trapping at another. And the deer lab has not released any data information on the study they have at this time, but researchers here and around the U.S. have been looking at the deer-coyote relationship for years, with most research concluding that intensive predator removal dramatically improves wild whitetail numbers. In one such study, University of Georgia graduate Corey Vandergild, it was discovered on a 2,000-acre wildlife study area the removal of 22 coyotes and 10 bobcats prior to fawning increased fawn survival by more than 250%. Now, I know that study's real because I was the trapper that did that study. Predator Control Group did that. Another University of Georgia study compared the effects of predation removal on fawn recruitment in an area where coyotes weren't removed. That study found that 2 fawns were recruited for every 3 fawns in the removal zone, while it took 28 more does to recruit the same number of fawns in the non-removal area. So you got to have twice as many deer somewhere you don't manage to have the same amount of fawns in somewhere you do manage with trapping. Remember, you're a landowner, not a trapper. Let that sink in a minute. Already, most wildlife biologists believe coyotes affect deer in 2 ways. Directly through mortality and indirectly through behavioral responses to predation risk. Current research is focused more on measuring the effects of predation, including shifts in space use, forging behavior, and body condition. For Illinois' deer hunters and deer watchers, the connection in the University of Georgia study was interesting because Georgia, like Illinois, is in the middle of a coyote population explosion. Among questions being asked during this population explosion, not to mention the state's established bobcat and potential future cougar and wolf populations, is if coyotes and other predators can they cohabitate in the state. According to an Illinois natural history study with fawns in the Chattanooga area, coyotes kill 20 to 80% of the fawns in different populations. That's in Chicago? Holy crap. I didn't know there's that many deer in Chicago to do a study like that, but apparently there is. The ratio, hunters and scholars agree, it's likely to be different in rural areas across the rest of the state where deer have more cover to protect themselves. This is also an ongoing argument as to cows have any effect on adult deer. Meanwhile, the QDMA recently released a list of findings from past studies centered on deer-coyote relationship. In an Auburn University deer study, trapping of coyotes and other predators during fawning season improved fawning survival by 80%. In one of the largest studies on effects of coyotes on white-tailed deer in a U.S. Forest Service, collared and observed 60 fawns at the Savannah River site in South Carolina. Within the first 6 weeks, 44 of the fawns were dead, 35 were killed by coyotes, and 6 were killed by bobcats. A look at 353 coyote scats collected on 2 public hunting areas by the University of Georgia indicated that coyotes on one site switched almost exclusively to eating fawns during the fawning season. Aside to ongoing research on predators, coyotes are not alone in causing havoc on deer herds. A study from Auburn University found that deer sightings at trail camera sites increased dramatically after feral hogs were trapped and lethally removed from the surrounding areas. The study results strongly suggest that deer activity avoid hogs, so hogs can be essentially an exclusive reason for deer from food sources and by their presence. So what does that mean? What does all that mean? Now, you're not a trapper, guys. You're someone that manages deer. And this is there's 2 reasons I'm reading this to you. And reading, when you're trying to read out loud, is not as easy as reading in your head. So I'm not a professional reader. You have to excuse me. And if it's too bad, pull this up, read it yourself. From the studies it's been shown, since you're a deer hunter or a deer manager now, 70 to 80% from biologists and the QDMA and universities are saying are being ate by coyotes. 80%. Now what you've got to realize as a deer manager is it's about a 50-50 shot if it's a doe or a buck when it's born. That's just the way the percentages come out in deer. So if you're losing 80% of your fawns, you're losing 40% of your bucks. That is a direct income source to a land manager. Because let's say you're in Illinois, which is a hot place to hunt right now, and you know that you've got 12 huntable bucks on your property. That means you can sell those hunts from 25 to 8,000, 10,000, whatever they go for in Illinois. It's got a return on investment with each one of those deer. You can sell those deer to a hunter. He'll come in and pay you to hunt them. That's how you make money. Now, if every year you're losing 40% of your bucks, over a course of 3 to 5 years when those deer get big enough that hunters want to take them, you're not dealing with a finite number of bucks you could hunt. You're dealing with a much larger number because you have a multiplication factor going on inside of there, because the number is going to multiply each year, and it's going to be your job to keep them there and to keep them healthy. But if you're losing 80% of them or 40% of your bucks, you can see why it's getting harder and harder in places where count numbers are exploding for recreational hunters to be able to go out and have a good time and keep spending money so the money flows into the state so they can keep everything working the way they want it to work in the wildlife side. And it's getting harder and harder for landowners that want to lease or sell deer hunts to make the money that they could make because of coyotes. So as a landowner, where does that leave you? If you want the deer and you want the fawns so you can have more bucks, you've got to protect the bucks. Now, there's two ways of doing this. You've got a very highly inefficient way that a lot of landowners try for a couple of years, and they figure out it just doesn't work, and that's calling. Calling is fun. You will kill some predators, but you will never get the numbers to where they need to be. Now, another interesting thing about coyotes, if you don't take the numbers below 70% of their height at population, it doesn't seem to really affect the fawn numbers. That's why calling doesn't work. And that's why you as a landowner now need to understand this, because your friend Billy wants to go out and shoot a coyote and he gets two a year. He's not really doing you any good because he's not getting it below that 70%. And there's tons of studies that show that number. So you got to have a way, if you're wanting to really amp up your fawn recruitment, to get the coyotes down below 70% of the height of their carry capacity. Calling won't get it. That leaves trapping and snaring. An article like this really gives no alternatives, because there is no alternatives. There is another alternative. The other alternative is let nature take its course and let the deer numbers plummet. Eventually, the deer numbers will get so low that the coyote numbers will also dwindle with it. And then there'll be an upscale on deer, and then the coyote will come right behind them just like they're doing right now. And you'll have this cycle of high deer numbers and low deer numbers. I've talked to several guys from Georgia that work for the state government that are trying to figure out what has happened to their deer. Now, if you live somewhere like Michigan or New York or Wisconsin or something like that, where you've got these very restrictive deer seasons, you know, you get like 3 days here and it's with a bow, and then you get 2 days here and it's with a rifle, then you get a 4 day doe season, and then maybe another buck season, and that's your deer season. Guys, Georgia, up until the last couple of years, starting from August to near about freaking February, you're allowed one or two deer a day. And they couldn't keep the deer population under control, even by that liberal of a hunting season. Well, there's a new hunter in Georgia now that is keeping it in check, and it's driving it into the dirt, and that's coyotes. They know it. Landowners are starting to finally realize this. Back when I started getting into predator control, I had to really sell this idea. The QDMA, Quality Deer Management Association, was on the shelf because biologists at that time did not want to believe it. Because for some reason, if a biologist does not see a study that shows, peer-reviewed, that if you stand in front of a train, you're going to get your brain smashed out, they won't believe that if you stand in front of a train, you get your brain smashed out. I don't know why biologists have that mindset. If they don't have a study for it, and then they get to argue over that study, then they get to go do another study. And after so many of these studies, they kind of look around and go, well, you know, maybe if we stand on the train track and the train hits us, it ain't going to turn out too well. Because, you know, we got scientific proof now that show that. And that's kind of where I was, where the biologist didn't believe you could stand in front of a train. So I was really having to sell this to landowners. And it wasn't through the biologist, really. It was through the landowners seeing stuff on their own ground. They knew that they used to could drive out and see all these does and triplet fawns running around. And they had a lot of small bucks every single year. And then they got to start managing their herd from there. And then it turned into, we don't hardly see any fawns anymore. We definitely don't see any doubles and triples. And we're not seeing very many bucks, and our deer numbers are going down, and we're giving them more food, more water, and everything else, and the numbers still going down. We're doing everything with the cover that the biologists are telling us, and the numbers are still going down. I've got to look for something else. And that's where my end was at that time. Now, guys, okay, now I need you to take your deer guy's hat off, put it away, put your trapper hat back on. Because now I'm talking to trappers. I'm not talking to you, the deer guy. Now you, as the trapper, if you know numbers like this, like it's coming off the back of your hand, and you know them, when someone says, deer don't get killed by coyotes, you start rattling off studies. If you're talking to a landowner, you don't go talk to a landowner on purpose unprepared. You just don't do it. It's silly and it's childish if you do that. In my opinion, if you know you're going to be talking to a landowner, you need to treat it like you're going to the Supreme Court to argue a case, because that's probably what's going to happen. But you don't argue it like being a peckerhead, not the way that you do it on Facebook, not where you start being cynical and argumentative. You listen to them, you acknowledge what they're saying, you lead the direction in the way that you want to lead it from that point. Hey, man, did you hear about this study that the University of Georgia did? You know, I've got that. Let me show you this. I've got this in the truck. You'll find this interesting. Now, you're not the one that he's got to argue with. And for some reason, people are still in this mindset that if someone's got a degree, they're smart. So now the person that's probably grew up believing that someone has a degree is smart is going to look at this and go, just at this one, he's going to see five different studies, I believe, we went over real quick. Why coyotes and hogs are bad on their property. He's going to see the experts now tell him you're going to lose 80% of your deer. And it doesn't matter if you're downtown Chicago or not. And now he's going to start believing this. And he's going to start thinking, you know, when I bought this property, we had deer coming out of our ears. We had to shoot and shoot and shoot just so we can have any forage left. There were so many deer. Now, nothing's touching the forage, and we're feeding and watering and doing more food plots and doing spending all this money, and we got less and less deer. This makes sense. He will jump to that conclusion. But you as the trapper have got to have this information in hand. Now, this is going to be either for, if you're a control trapper, it's important. If you're a fur trapper, it's just as important. Because if you go to Farmer's Bob place, and it's where him and his grandkids get to go hunt deer, and you can have an intelligent, leading conversation where you have the pain of the deer getting gone, and the solution is either very inefficiently as calling, and you can explain that to them, or it's through trapping and snaring. Now you've got a couple of different opportunities here. You can do it for pay, you can do it for fur, or you can now have a little business on the side where maybe you teach Farmer Bob how to trap, and he can take his children out and go trapping, and then they've got more deer. And what you'll find with the third one of those is Farmer Bob may give you a couple hundred dollars to spend a day with him, showing him how to trap, which is actually pretty fun. But then the realities of life is going to hit Farmer Bob, and he's not going to have time to trap, because, like most people, the time's askew on what's important. So guess who's he's going to call? He's going to call you. And now you can go back to either A or B, pay or fur. Maybe it can be as simple as, you know, I'm going to probably spend about $150 in gas over the next month or so coming over here. If you cover my fuel, dude, I'll come over and do everything I can to rid you of these coyotes. Knock yourself out, man. Now you got property, now you got coyotes, now you got the other animals, and you got your fuel paid for. It's all in how you look at this stuff, is how it's important or how it's not important. Now here's the second part of why I'm bringing this up. And before I say this on the internet, let me have a disclosure here, because if you call me up and think that you're just going to be slick about getting me to do this for you, it ain't going to happen. I'm getting ready to tell you to have more information in your arsenal about deer and coyotes than you'll ever have. But I'm also telling you I'm not going to do this for you. So I'm getting ready to tell you how to do it, but don't call me up if you don't understand how to do it. And the reason I'm being hard-nosed about this, guys, is because when I say this, I know if I don't say it the way I'm getting ready to say it, I'll have 100 people call me over the next 6 months wanting me to spend 45 minutes to an hour explaining to them how to do this, and I don't have the time. If you get lost in what I'm getting ready to tell you, go find you a 15-year-old kid. Give them $20 and they'll set it up for you in 5 minutes. But don't come to me wanting me to spend probably 150, 200 hours over the next 6 months setting this up for guys. I just don't have the time, so I'm not going to do it. But I will tell you how to get information like this. One is to set up a Gmail account as a news. So like if you're Bob, bobsdeernews@gmail.com. It's a totally separate account, and you want this separate if you've already got a Gmail account. And then you can go into the settings, and you can have Gmail through Google search topics for you. So what you could put in whitetail coyotes, whitetail deer studies coyotes, whitetail deer eaten by coyotes, whitetail deer fawn recruitment, whitetail deer and hogs, bobcats, fawn recruitment. You got to play with the number. You got to play with the words like that. So you're going to go in and you'll probably have 15 or 20 of these things that you come up with of any way that you think a writer that's not a trapper is going to have a piece of information out there somewhere on the web dealing with coyotes, conflicts with whitetails. And you can do the same thing with bobcats and whitetails, or raccoons and turkey, or raccoons and quail, skunk and quail, coyotes and turkey, different things like that. And you set that Gmail account up as a news source, a separate account, and then when anybody anywhere in the world writes something about coyotes and whitetails and fawn recruitment and predation and stuff like that, it's going to go to your internet. Google is going to send that to your email. And if you do a bunch of them, the reason you don't want it on your regular email is because you're going to wake up on a Friday morning one morning and you're going to have to go through 120 of these posts. And if you go on vacation, you're going to come back and there could be 1,000 of them. And I can tell you from somebody right now that has already answered, I think it was 74 emails this morning and deleted close to 300 spams. You don't want that to be a daily process. But what that does is articles like this will show up on your Google account. You go through them in the evening or in the morning while you're drinking coffee. You look at these and you go, holy cow, that's some really cool information that is would allow me, if I print this off, or email this to a couple of guys I've been talking to, put it up on Facebook, put it on Pinterest, put it on Instagram or however that thing works, because I think that's going to be the new Facebook just from the way kids are talking. Whatever that platform is, and you're putting that out there all the time. And you're printing these articles off, just like I can print this article off. I know every one of those studies before this article, so it's not going to do me any good. But if you didn't, you could print this off. But what do you do with those? When you go see a landowner, go to Walmart and buy you a $2 one of the, and you'll need a big one, trust me, if you set up this email account. You'll need a big one. One of those great big notebooks, it's got the three rings that you can open and close. Then go a little bit further down the aisle and you'll see all, you'll see those paper things, I mean those plastic sleeve things that you can put documents in like pictures. And then you'll print off this article. If it's more than one page, you'll staple it together and you'll slide it into one of those plastic sleeves. And some days you may get five or six of these. Print them off. It's not going to cost you that much money. You're going to slide it on the, you're going to turn that page over and you're going to slide it in. So over the course of probably 6 months, you're going to fill up a whole notebook of these articles. Now, if you're on the control side, it could be raccoons in the roof. It could be raccoon diseases. It could be guano, people dying of guano pneumonia. Whatever it is that you're in your trapping world that's important to you and the people you're trying to get on their land or get money from, you start using Google to work for you for free, because the email's free and they do it for free, to give you all the information with all the punches in the teeth that someone needs to get. So say you go up to Farmers Bob's, and you're going to get this a lot, guys, and if you hadn't already, you haven't been talking to many people. You go up to Farmer Bob's, he's got 500 acres. You're in Pennsylvania, for example. You seen any coyotes around here? Yeah. Man, bastards are everywhere. Well, do you mind if someone traps? I don't know if I want someone on my property. Do you deer hunt? Yeah, I've been, me and my grandson's deer hunt, and we lease it to two guys. And you don't want someone to trap because they're going to catch coyotes that'll help you have more deer? I don't quite follow you. You know, I'm not going to mess up your roads. I'm not going to leave your gates open. And, you know, we can work on a schedule so we're not on top of each other. And, you know, you go through your little pitch, and he goes, well, I just don't think them coyotes really mess with coyote numbers that much. And you go, well, I understand that. You know, I used to kind of believe the same thing. And then, you know, being a trapper, I try to really stay up on the modern information of trapping. And so I've been looking online. Let me show you something. And if you got this thing in your hand and you flip it open, and he's looking at a thing like this, do whitetails alter their habits to avoid coyotes? And he looks down the sheet, and where you printed this off, and it says, University of Georgia, 200% more fawns. Biologists believe coyote effects in two ways, and these are highlighted in yellow, so his eye's going to go to the headline to the yellow marks, because that's just what his natural brain's going to do. So he's going to see the article. He's going to see what you want him to see directly. Then you flip the sheet over. And you've got another article with the same way. And you flip the sheet over. And he's going to see that you probably got like 100 of these in there. And he's going to see University of Georgia, Quality Deer Management Association, University of Auburn, University of Mississippi, Denver Research, USDA, and what you've got highlighted down. And you're going to highlight the stuff that just gives him a quick overview of what is so bad about that. Like on this one article, I would definitely highlight, in an Auburn University deer study, trapping of coyotes and other predators during fawning season improved fawning season by 80%. 80%. Now, Farmer Bob doesn't have to be a biologist. But when his brain sees that, and then you flip it over and he sees it again, and he flips it over and he sees it again, this is in marketing, guys. It's not you, the trapper, trying to talk him, the farmer, into it. Now, you're the educator trying to help out the farmer to have more deer. And here's universities and biologists and different and different associations that he already has faith in is going to be telling what you already told him. Your relationship will then flip. You're not a guy that he doesn't know, showing up when he doesn't want to deal with you. And you're asking questions that he doesn't care about to let you on his property that he doesn't want the headache from. Now you're a resource that gives him more deer. You see how that works? In an easy way, I mean, you can just Google these topics, but I'm telling you, if you do the Gmail, bobsdeernews@gmail.com, and then you go in with the settings, and it'll let you actually search for stuff through that email. You will have hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of them over a course of a year. It will blow your mind. Every article that comes out of the QDMA or Sports of Field or whatever, and a lot of them are going to be basically rewrites of the same thing. But from a landowner's point of view, he's seeing Sports of Field, 80% dead deer. Deer biologist, 70% dead deer. You know, some other type hunting, you do hunting magazines, it's obvious that I don't, but you know, all those magazines are now online, and it's going to say that over and over and over again. Now your relationship is one where you're an asset to the farmer, not a hindrance or an aggravation to the farmer. And getting property at that point becomes a whole lot easier. And not just on his property, it'll be on his buddy's property. Because if you were smart and you were on the ball and you weren't so cheap, you would have 15 or 20 of the most painful articles you found online that were stapled together at the back of that notebook and go, well, here, I've got some extras. Why don't you just take a look at these when you're watching TV or something and hand them to him. It cost you off your printer 30 cents. You give out 100 of them, it's at $3, $30, whatever it is. What did it cost you? Nothing. Less than one cow at today's market. And when he goes and he reads those, and he can go and he, if he doesn't believe them, he can go online and he can look it up and see that you hadn't changed anything. When he's talking to his buddies, do you not think that's going to be on their tongues? And this guy is now going to be, you're basically a free marketer for you. That's powerful stuff, guys. That's powerful stuff if you want to get property. Let's see the time. I got some more stuff that I want to do. Holy cow. I guess we don't. I was going to go into coyote snared. Well, there's a couple of things I want to cover real, real quick that I definitely want to do. If you hadn't seen it and you've got, I think it's the Sportsman's Channel, could be Pursuit Channel. F&T's going to kill me for not knowing. I know where it is on my TV. It's one of those two. You know, F&T's got a show that they run two or three times a week. If you've got young kids, it's a great show because it shows them, you know, animals and stuff like that, and gets them ramped up. Plus, they see it on TV, and it makes it cooler. So it's Freedom Brands Outdoors. You know, you can go to their website at fntpost.com and get the schedule and all that on there. And it's just fun to watch because it's one of the few times in life that you get to see trapping on TV that's not some joke of a reality show where, you know, it's obvious the guy catches two critters a year and has no idea what he's doing. So... And it's just a good thing to do. And the last thing I want to talk about is this is not going to pertain to anybody except guys that live in Tennessee. If you go to my website, guys, you can't buy from me in the state of Tennessee. And a lot of guys get upset or they don't understand until they understand why. And I'm going to put this out there so everybody understands why. Tennessee used to be like every other state when it comes to sales tax. We have a high sales tax here in the state. So if you buy from me in the state of Tennessee, even though it's not on the store, I've got to pay sales tax on you, which has not been a problem. I'll eat that 9.25%. Not a problem. Then they went to online. Again, not a problem. Got away from paper. Everything's online. No big deal. Doesn't bother me one bit. But what they did is if you want to pay online, you basically got two choices. One, you give them total access to your bank account from a government website that a 16-year-old overdosed on Skittles with HDHD and an iPhone can probably break into, gets all your account numbers and can go do whatever he wants to with it. So that's really not an option for any business owner, and they know that. The other option is pay with a credit card or a debit card. Again, no problem. But here's where the problem comes in, and here's where my little protest and starve the beast mentality comes into this. I use Visa debit card. For me, as a business owner in Tennessee, I can't pay the state with that because they want you to use a MasterCard, because the MasterCard is at a higher rate and gives them a kickback above the 9.25%. It's almost 2%, as close as I can tell from looking into it. So what they want me as a business owner online, and they know this, is to pay 11% to sell to somebody in my state. And more than that, that makes me upset. It's not that they want me to pay more. It's they're trying to do it without voting on it and actually being men and women about it and bringing it to the public to raise the sales tax. So what they've done is they've raised the sales tax in the state of Tennessee, not to the consumer, but for the business owner. And I'm not going to pay it. And the simple way for me not to give them any more of anybody's hard-earned money that comes through me is I don't let you order from me from the state of Tennessee. If they want to do it on the up and up, and they don't want to be slimy about it the way politicians are, and they don't think they're smarter than everybody else the way politicians are, and they get a kickback when they shouldn't be getting a kickback on taxes of all goodness things, they let people pay like every other thing pays in the world, I'd be fine with it. But since they're slimy in the state of Tennessee on the sales tax, I'm not giving any more sales tax. If I take an order from somebody in Tennessee, I've got to pay sales tax, or I've got the force and the threat of guns in prison, which is how government does everything, for me to pay them money. So my simple hillbilly Appalachian red-blooded American psyche says, if you want to be slimy with me, go pound sand and screw yourself. You get no more money from me. And I told them that at the state office. I also put it on the state sales Facebook page, and it lasted about 1.2 seconds. But they will not get any more money from me if they're going to be slimy about it. And I'm sorry for the guys in Tennessee that want to order from me but can't online. You can't order from me, period. You can't come up to my house. You can't. I'm not going to take a chance on doing that. So from now on, if you're in the state of Tennessee, F&T, Okie Cable and Trap, and Wildlife Control Supplies are sponsors on Trapping Radio. Okie Cable and Trap carries almost everything I've got. Wildlife Control Supplies carries almost everything I've got. F&T carries everything I've got except for, I believe it's Muskie and Otter Call. So anything I've got, you can order from my sponsors. And for me to do that, that means not only am I not going to pay them that extra percentage because they're slimy little peckerheads up there, it's going to cost me the difference between retail and wholesale for you to buy it somewhere else. But to me, it's important to be that way. I'm not going to give them any money to do that. So if you want to order from me on my products, which I greatly appreciate, you're going to have to probably order it from one of my sponsors, because they're really the only ones that carry a large amount of what I've got. There's links in the show notes down there. Just click on the link if you want Boss Dog and Unfair Advantage. Pick one of the sponsors, go to their store and order it from them. I'm very grateful that you do that, and so are they. But that is the reason why I do not sell inside of the state of Tennessee. I will not support sliminess. Because to me, that is borderline criminal of what they did with MasterCard. I will not own a MasterCard because of that. And as childish as this may seem to some people, to me, it's got to start somewhere. And for me, this is my starting point where I'm going no more. So that's why. Well, hope everybody is going out and doing what they're supposed to do this time of year. I know some of y'all got absolutely pounded last week with some snow and stuff, and hopefully that you get a break from that for the rest of us in the South. Guys, it's prime time down here. You know, now is when you make the most money because stuff moves the best. So wherever you're at in the country, just keep your head down and keep plowing away, guys. Of course, before you know it, it'll be summertime, and you'll be wishing you did something that you didn't do and hoping you do it again next year and don't catch yourself in that situation. So go out and do what you need to do and what you want to do. Have a good time at it and just wear them out. All righty. See y'all next week. Bye.
He's just made in America.